Welcome to Science, Sound, and Spirituality with Master Teacher David Holtz. Join us weekly as we learn to dance with change and transformation. And now, here with today's program is David Holtz.
Hello, we want to wish you, we want to welcome all of you today to Science, Sound, and Spirituality. This is your host, David Holtz. And today we're going to be talking about a wonderful, wonderful experience that happened in my life that changed my life and the lives of millions of people today, called A Course in Miracles. And we have with us the teacher of not only prosperity, but of A Course in Miracles with us, Alan Batten, who is also our producer here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where this broadcast is coming from. So many of you out there may have probably heard of A Course in Miracles, and maybe some of you haven't. And today you're going to hear a little bit about how it happened and what it means to us today and what can it do for us in the sense of helping us to go to the next level of our conscious evolution that we are in the midst of. So, Alan, we're glad to have you today.
Glad to be here.
And how long have you been into Course in Miracles? I don't even know.
I first began facilitating groups about 15 years ago.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I attended a group that was facilitated by Randolph Wilkinson, Reverend Randolph Wilkinson, who after about 5 years made his transition, and I took that group over and facilitated it.
And Randolph was the minister at Unity of Charlotte at that time. I remember coming and speaking at that time at Unity of Charlotte. So let's talk a little bit about what is A Course in Miracles.
So David, tell me, how did A Course in Miracles come to be in existence?
Well, it's a very interesting story, actually. I want to say before I start that most of the things that have been real landmarks in my life that has really guided me on my spiritual path has come through different people that I would have never thought it would come through. You know, coming from an old, more religious point of view, it seemed like it should come through the saints, through those who have spent hours and hours in meditation and prayer and study. But actually, it has not come that way. And this particular story actually happens back in the 60s, around the mid-60s, with a woman who was named Helen Schuchman. And Helen was a professor of psychology in New York City. She was of Jewish descent, which makes it interesting because, as we'll find out later, that the voice that began to speak to her would have been the most unlikely voice that she probably would have ever thought would speak to her, being Jewish, and that is the voice of Jesus. At least it was recognized itself as being the voice of Jesus, and we just assume that to be so. Helen was, like everybody else, very much into her work, what she did, and most people who are in a profession like Helen was in probably lived a very stressful life and situation. So she had an assistant that apparently they weren't getting along that well under the stress and the pressure of the job, and this was Bill Thetford. And Bill just came to a place, at least I understand it, where he just said there's got to be a different way. I guess they were kind of, at each other all the time, and there was a lot of anger and a lot of stuff going on that made the workplace very unpleasant to be in. And something in him just came up in a form of a decision to change it. He didn't want it to be. And all he said was, there just has to be a better way. And that seemed to open up a door somewhere in his consciousness. And as Helen agreed with that, it opened the door in her consciousness. So once that door was open, and the door really to me is, the Course teaches, is willingness. You know, it says, just give me a little willingness. So as they both became willing for something better to take place, Helen began to have interesting experiences. She began to have dreams, and at night she began to get these, I call them downloads. A voice began to speak to her, and I think she was very uncomfortable with this happening. I don't think she was that type of a what we call New Age or spiritual person as we know spirituality today, although we're all spirit, but we're not all acting on that. And I don't think Helen was acting in that way. But due to the fact that the door was once open to her consciousness, and that something from another dimension, or let's say a vibration or frequency, found a way in to begin to speak to her, in the form of what we called it a channeling. So Helen became the channel for this voice to speak to her. And the voice continued to speak. I don't think she said anything in the beginning because she didn't know what to think about it and thought it was pretty out of character for her. But at some point, she just felt she had to talk to someone, so she talked to her assistant, Bill Thefford, and told him that she was hearing this voice, and this voice was speaking. And the voice finally spoke to her and said, "This is A Course in Miracles. Write it down." So she said to Bill, "What should I do?" And Bill said, "Well, I think I'd write it down." So she began to write down transcribing this voice. And I read in her story that she could absolutely be in a place in which this voice was coming through and she's dictating it. And the phone would ring or something would happen. Somebody come to the door and she could come back and not even miss a beat. So this was very different than some human mental thing that was going on. And she knew that. She knew it was something that was not coming from her, but through her. And, of course, at this point, she just decided to go with it. So she would write all these things down and take notes. And I think the story goes that Bill then would take and transcribe it for her. And I think this went on for about 1972, early 70s, about 6 or 7 years from 65. Which I found interesting while I'm mentioning that is that's also the amount of years that it took to translate and transcribe the King James Bible. It was 7 years. So I always look for patterns of things like that. So that's a lot. That's a lot of dictating that had to go on. And, of course, I have this book in front of me, which is a lot of pages. It is approximately – now it's used to be separate books, but three different books. But today it is one book, and you have all three of them. But to put them all together, you have 1,333 pages. That is a lot of pages. So what is A Course of Miracles basically about? Well, the voice finally identified itself to be Jesus. Now remember, Helen is a Jewish agnostic psychologist, anything but what should be a channel for Jesus to come through, probably, according to old thinking. But nevertheless, this shows us that whatever and whoever this being was that identified itself as Jesus must not have viewed things the way we do. That's the first lesson, I think, that's important in A Course in Miracles, that things are not based upon who we are as a body identity, as a race, as a gender. All these things that we have been arguing and fighting about and wars have been over for thousands of years did not matter at that moment. That was a moment of transcendence, of things that are really irrelevant to things that maybe are more deeply important to us. And because Helen very much was into Shakespeare and loved Shakespeare, the voice said, because of that, I'm going to give you this in a rhythm, a Shakespearean rhythm. And you told me a name for that, Alan, a while ago that was interesting.
That's iambic pentameter.
That's a big word, but it means in Shakespearean rhythm.
Yes.
And I mention that because if you're out there and you ever do look into A Course in Miracles, or if you have A Course in Miracles sitting around collecting dust, because when you picked it up to read it, you found it a little challenging to read it, I think it's important that you understand that there is a certain rhythm to the way it was given to Helen. So the voice said, it is A Course in Miracles. And it didn't say it's the Course in Miracles. No, we refer to it as the Course, but actually it is A Course in Miracles. And I think that's important to realize that A Course in Miracles is not saying that we are the only truth that there is. This is just another path in which many people will be drawn to, who will find their path toward their true identity, and understand that much of what we're giving ourselves and energy to is only to make illusions real in our lives. And I think that's important. So A Course in Miracles is based upon, even though there's over 1,300 pages in this, what it really says in just about three sentences is nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists, and here lies the peace of God. That's really good. I'm going to read it again. Nothing real can be threatened. So if it's real, it cannot be threatened. If it's unreal, it does not exist. Herein lies the peace of God. Now, this challenges our whole thinking of duality, of separation, which is what the Course actually teaches is the same thing as what Christianity calls original sin. Original sin, according to the Course, is just a belief in separation. Sin being a lack of love. So it does not give you the opposites, say that what you know is good gives you an idea of what is evil, or what is evil gives you an idea of what is good, or what is this makes that what it is. There is no opposite to it, that either one of those is real and one of those is not real. And Alan, one of my first things that I try to tell people when I'm teaching the Course is to use this simple example of light and dark, day and night. Now, I can accept that day is real because it has a source, the sun. When the sun is shining on the side of the planet I live on, there is day. When the planet turns and the sun is no longer there and there's no source to it, even though I call that night and darkness, there is no source to night and darkness. The moon does not cast dark on the world. It's just an absence of what's real. So I can say light is real and dark is not real. Step further. And I did this class many years ago, but I asked somebody, if light is real, it will remain real in the presence of darkness. So if you bring light into a dark room, what's going to happen? The light remains light. Now, if darkness is the opposite, the equal opposite of light, then it's going to do the same thing. And that means I can bring darkness into light and darkness will remain darkness, just as light remained light in the darkness. Got me? But it doesn't. There is no way I've ever seen darkness remain dark in the presence of light.
You can't go out and get a jar of dark.
Can't get a jar of dark. And that's exactly what I had somebody do. This guy was so good to indulge me that I asked him to go outside and get a jar of darkness and bring it in. And he came in. I said, where'd your darkness go? And believe it or not, the man went out the second time to get darkness. And it didn't happen. So he finally, I get it. There is no darkness. There's only light. So I just think that's a good, simple allegory to make us understand that oftentimes we see things as equal opposites, but the Course says that if it's real, then it can't be threatened by the darkness. The light cannot be threatened by darkness. They don't fight each other. They don't have wars with each other. And if something is unreal, such as darkness, it doesn't exist. It's just an absence of what is real. Of course, I get concerned that in these places of where things are not real are translated psychologically to be blind spots in consciousness. And in blind spots of consciousness, in other words, where I'm believing in something that is not real, but I believe it's real, but it does not exist if it's not real, right? So that leaves a blank space in my consciousness. So what we call, and what Freud called, the ego, the superego, the pseudo-ego, which we can talk about in a little bit, the ego fills in with illusion. And what is an illusion? But it's actually a mental construct of something that in itself is not real of itself. Only believing it is real makes it real. So I call these idols, psychological idols. So when we make things that are not real, real, by our ability to believe in it. As you know, my background a lot is through my doctorate is in Bible-type metaphysical teaching. And there's a place in Psalms 115, I believe around verse 8, that says, "And they made idols that had eyes that could not see, ears that could not hear, a throat that could not speak, and feet that could not walk." In other words, they weren't real, but we made an idol out of constructs of mental beliefs. But it says, but those that believed in them became like them. So in other words, they fulfilled their illusion because they believed in it. So what I'm trying to get to here is the purpose of A Course in Miracles. Showing up when it did, in the middle of the 60s of all times, in which there was all kinds of almost a revolutionary experience, event going on in this country and around the world, but especially in America, with the flower children and the hippies and all of that, that there was a surge of some kind of new energy that was coming in anyway, as people were trying to reach other dimensions. Some were reaching it through meditation. Some were reaching it through mind-altering drugs. Some were finding it through religion. Believe it or not, I come from a religion that you could have your own inner drug if you come from a very emotional type religion that I did from, that worked yourself up into an altered state of consciousness. But it was all looking for something, because there was an innate alarm that went off in us that there is other higher dimensions than this one. So when we come back, why don't we talk a little bit more about this experience and why the Course in Miracles showed up at the time that it did, and what did it do for us, and what can it do for us at this time? So we'll be right back after this message from Soma Energetics.
We'll return to today's edition of Science, Sound, and Spirituality with David Holtz after this word from our sponsor, Soma Energetics.
Soma Energetics is a series of sound therapy techniques developed by certified master sound therapy teacher David Holtz at the turn of the century, utilizing the power of the ancient frequencies via our custom-made solfeggio tuning forks. Soma Energetics offers training in live workshops or via DVD home study courses. Course materials include color solfeggio tuning forks in the form of energy tuners and body tuners, and they are available exclusively from Soma Energetics. At SomaEnergetics.com, you'll have the finest tools in energy healing and sound therapy at your fingertips. So take a moment to visit this very informative website and be sure and check out the combo packages for the best deals. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 980-949-8921. Remember, visit www.somaenergetics.com to experience the power of sound therapy.
Mm-hmm. And now we return to today's topic on science, sound, and spirituality. Here's Master Teacher David Holtz.
Yes, we want to welcome you back to Science, Sound, and Spirituality. I am David Holtz. I'm your host today, and I'm here with Alan Batten, our producer here in Charlotte, as well as a teacher of prosperity and also A Course in Miracles and probably other things that you do too.
Well, a couple of relationship classes and things like that. But tell me, David, how did you come to A Course in Miracles? How did it impact you?
All right, good question. Actually, it happened in 88. In 88, I had an experience. Now, I've been in the ministry a lot of years, and my background is somewhat what you'd call traditional fundamental Christianity, although I don't think I was ever very good with it, as far as the dogma and the doctrine of fear and people burning in hell and all of that. I knew something different in my heart, but that's all I knew, being raised in it, and that's what I did. And I think in developing belief systems outside of yourself, but being in touch with your own heart, way that you feel about things, the belief system that you learned will begin to dissipate at some point. And that's what happened to me in 88. After years and years of ministering, pastoring, founding churches, and all the things that I was doing, I was forever, ever searching. I've always been on a quest to understand what is truth for me. But in 88, I came to the end of what I call my belief system, as I've known a belief system, being taught from outside of myself, from outside religion, culture, society. And I came into a very uncomfortable at that time place, actually, in which I didn't know what I believed or if I believed. And here I was up speaking about God and speaking about spiritual things, and I felt more and more separate from what I was saying. It just didn't connect to me anymore, and I felt terrible about that and didn't know what to do with it. So I was like planning in my escape, you know, from the ministry that I need to learn to do something else, that I can't continue to speak about something I don't believe in anymore. And I didn't know if I believed in God. Now, I've learned in looking back that it wasn't God I wasn't believing in. It was in a belief or concept or perception of God that was dying. When God. But to me, that was God, because I think to a lot of us, our God is what we believe something to be. We worship our belief system. So when the belief system goes, you think God's going and everything's going. So a long story made short, at that time, I was at a place where I felt I was at the edge of a cliff, looking over into the great void. And to me, that meant to utter ruin. And I was pretty angry about that, pretty upset. That if there was a God, why would God, after all these years, bring me to this point that I wouldn't believe anymore? So I did have a powerful experience, which was in the first time I was in something called a New Thought Church. It happened to be a little Science of Mind church in Denver, Colorado, that we were renting out for meetings with another group that I had. And I just loved the feeling of that church. I'd never felt such peace anywhere I'd ever been. And of course, they were meditating and they were positive, and I didn't know what that was. But I loved being in this church. I would go early and sit there, and I would stare at a little framed saying on the wall, and it was an excerpt from an old poem, French poem. And just to kind of paraphrase it, it says, "Come to the cliff," and nobody came, and the voice had come to the cliff and said, "We are afraid." And the voice had come to the cliff, and we did go. He did push us, and we did fly. And I just had this something in my heart just leap, like I'm not jumping off the cliff to my utter ruin, but to fly into new experiences. And that just set me into a whole new expectation of what was coming next. So at that time, there was a young lady coming to Denver, Colorado every month. And it was growing and growing and growing, and her name was Marianne Williamson. And Marianne Williamson was speaking at a large metaphysical church there. I think it's called Mile High. And some of my people that were coming to my meetings was going to her meetings, and they were bringing me tapes of her lectures. And I just was enthralled with these tapes. And I think the thing that worked for me so well is the course has the language that I had learned. It wasn't a hard language. It was the language of my religion. It was about Jesus, Holy Spirit, sin, crucifixion. I got all those words, but was a whole different way of looking at it. Or as the course calls and defines miracle, a shift in perception. So it was a good thing. I think it's a good thing to use the same data that made up the program that you just had that you're losing and rearrange that data into a new program. And that's what happened to me. All of a sudden, I begin to see sin differently. I begin to see Holy Spirit differently. I begin to even see a Jesus differently that I had never known before. And of course, the course is main subject is about forgiveness. Forgiveness, not the ego's version of forgiveness, that you did wrong and I'm spiritual enough to forgive you, but about undoing the illusion of what I think I'm seeing and experiencing back to the reality of what's going on between two spiritual beings that is the reality. So I began to listen to those tapes and I became so interested. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth on A Course in Miracles actually was through Marianne Williamson's tapes. Marianne Williamson at that time was not as worldwide known as she is today, as the author that she is and the speaker that she is. But she finally in the 1980s, or 92 actually, was when she had the experience that changed her life, I'm sure, as anybody would. And that's when she went on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And with that, 2 million copies of A Course in Miracles was sold. Changed everything. And of course, for everyone, it changes everyone if you get Oprah on your side. So I have to say that I am thankful to Marianne Williamson and her wonderful way of teaching the course that helped me to become interested. So of course I got the course and started reading it and talking about it and speaking on it. And I've done that ever since 1988 and 89. So it's been a while. I've learned to just integrate it into the many, many things that I do. I don't often do just a Course in Miracles class, but sometimes I do. But I find that it fits into so many different other paths that I've basically been on. But that's exactly what changed me and brought me to this place in which I had a shift in perception, that wonderful miracle of consciousness that then made me a candidate to discover what we call new thought, which includes unity, science of mind, and other metaphysical ways of thinking.
And Marianne Williamson and I are old friends as far as reading A Course in Miracles and reading A Return to Love. What is the Course in Miracles is in several books, all into one volume. There is a workbook for students. Tell me about how that workbook impacts lives all around.
Okay. The main part of the book is called the textbook. It's the main part of the book, which represents a thought system about truth and illusion on two levels. As I've said earlier, it's non-dualism, which states that God is the only truth and reality. Perfect, unchanging, unchangeable, extending only love, so God does not extend punishment, only love, that's God is love. You know, people have to understand that God just doesn't have love, but God is love. That's two different things to me. So God is always extending this love through time and space, which can not really be comprehended from a dualistic perspective. So the theory further states that all life as we perceive it is actually one life because God has only one son. Now that's a challenge based upon traditional Christian teaching that Jesus is the only Son of God. But one thing that you learn in A Course in Miracles is this projection that the ego part of the mind. Now, I want to say this ego part of the mind for anyone listening to us that comes from a Bible point of view or a Christian point of view. It's not called that in the Bible, but it is referred to as the carnal mind, the carnal mind. The Bible is very clear to tell us that we have two aspects of the mind, a spiritual part and a carnal part. And the spiritual part is the part of the mind or the soul that stayed with reality and spirituality. And then the other part of the mind, which level one in reality never split, but the belief that it did caused it to go with the body. So you have two identities. You have the identity of your spiritual part of yourself or your soul, which is your true ego, really, because ego is identity. And then you have this part of the mind that says, I believe I'm separate. And I was just teaching a class recently on Forgiveness in Jesus by Kenneth Wapnick. And he makes it so, who was there with Helen, by the way, and Bill in the very beginning, who edited and was a great part of this. He has made his transition, but I love his work and so appreciate it. So I wanted to do a class on it. But he's talking about how this all happened. And he's a psychologist, so I liked his approach of psychology on a spiritual level. But he said it all happened when the mind asked the first question, who are you? At that moment, the mind asked a question it could not answer. That's the beginning of the ego we're talking about. I'm not trying to badmouth all ego, but the ego we're talking about is a pseudo-ego. It is a self that we make ourselves to be based on external conditionings, such as what society tells you you are, what culture tells you are, and especially what religion tells you you are. You know, this idea that you're born in sin is not an innate, inherent thing that somebody's just going to come up with. You have to be told that. Now, that doesn't mean because you're told that it's real, but if you believe it, then it becomes as real to you, right?
Right.
So the power of the illusion is in the belief. That's why there has to be the miracle of the shift. You have to shift from the belief of what is not real to the belief of what is real. So the text is written kind of in a way of undoing what we think everything is based upon, that part of the ego that identifies with our body. So even Jesus, the fact that the ego projected on the body of the man called Jesus or Yahshua, I doubt if he really knew his name was Jesus, but in his native tongue, it'd be Yahshua. Therefore, the body can only be one. Now, either my body is my body and Jesus's body is Jesus's body and your body is your body and we're all separate. But if we get past to this whole idea that he discovered something beyond his body that we call Christ. Christ. So traditional religion wants to make the only Son of God based upon a body that's separate from all other bodies. So the body of Jesus is the only begotten Son. And that's the whole way the whole story is written, the virgin birth and all of that is all written on the basis of making something separate from us, which is the body of Jesus. But yet Jesus, if you really get his teachings and even what's in the Bible, he seems to say that I'm wanting to share this. I don't want to keep it exclusively for myself and become the founder of one of the largest monotheistic religions in the world called Christianity or Judeo-Christianity. I'm actually here to share. And that's what the reality of love does, is to share. Because it says every time we share this truth with another person, we have this experience called the holy instant. The holy instant happens between two people. When two people or more gather together in the name or nature of love and connect with that, it's an explosion of energy. And it really is what true worship and praise is to recognize that. So the text is written in a way in which a lot of people are challenged with. I was. I mean, it starts out with, look at this chair. It does not exist. And I said, you're kidding me. Of course, there's a chair there. But as I really asked the Holy Spirit to help me with that, I said, wait a minute, that's a chair based upon what I've been taught that is. Actually, it's not a chair. Maybe I'm looking at some wood and some metal screws or whatever a chair is made out of. But I didn't say that. I said it's called a chair based upon what I've been told it is from my past or outside of myself. So a chair is a chair by how I perceive a certain way in which something looks. And that's with everything in the world of matter. Nothing would be anything unless we made it to be that. So somebody had to teach us, what is this desk I'm sitting at? Is the desk, because I've learned that taking a piece of wood or glass or whatever it is made into this shape is a desk and it has a certain use. But I learned that. Actually, it's, I'm sitting at just a piece of wood, but I don't see it that way. I see it as I perceive it to be and whatever way in which I see it. So the Course of Miracles is the way the system works is a way of undoing or causing correction to the way that we believe based upon the illusion. That makes sense to you? That's important.
Perfect sense.
Yeah. So instead of, you know, I know now we have something new coming on the scene called the Course of Love, which is not about undoing, but it's about us going forward in love after the undoing of A Course in Miracles. So I'm looking into that. It's kind of an interesting idea. And supposedly it is also coming from the same voice that recognizes itself to be Jesus. But the textbook represents a way in which we can correct and undo the fundamental error that we have believed, which has caused us to live and believe that we are separate. And of course, Kenneth Wapnick says immediately what sets in at that point is guilt. Is guilt. And guilt's kind of on two levels. And this is what I appreciate about his teaching. Guilt is almost universal human. Because we believe we are separate, we all have a certain unconscious guilt about that, whether we know it or not. But then you have the personal guilt about, well, I did this and I did that and I feel guilty about it. So you have an individual guilt, but you also have this human guilt that is within you on two levels. And this whole idea is to help us to undo that. One thing I love about what the Course does, it's not about fixing things. It's not about saying we don't have it any longer. We lost it and we need to get it. It's about that it's always been there, always will be there, but we have gone to a far country, like the prodigal son went to a far country. And it's not that far, actually. It's just within our own mind that we went from a place of oneness to a place of separation. So this whole result is called the sin, guilt, fear cycle that we're on. And the text is about helping us to undo all of that and to help us to get back to. So the workbook, actually, the work that is done is the undoing, not the doing. It is the undoing and bringing us back. Then there's another part of the book that's called the Manual for Teachers. And it's a collection of questions and answers, which I really think is great first. I really suggest to all of my students to read that first before the text, because the text is so different and still foreign to the mind that I think if you go back to the questions and the answers that you have something to come from. So this is just a personal thing that I found is easier, is to start with the Manual for Teachers, and it just gives simple questions like reincarnation or sin or what is the end of the world or what is judgment, things like that. It gives you a foundation. But it aims to at motivating the reader to become themselves a teacher of God. I like that we don't have the guru or the icon syndrome, that we all are teachers, little t teachers. At the same time, we're addressing the main teacher, capital T teacher, as the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit is that which teaches through the teachers. So if you're a teacher, you're letting the Holy Spirit teach through you. So this is a great place to be. So I think it's time for another break, and we'll be back in just a minute. We'll continue our conversation today on A Course in Miracles and how that can bring a miracle into your life. We'll be right back in just a moment.
We'll be back with more of today's program on science, sound, and spirituality after this word from Soma Energetics.
Soma Energetics is a series of sound therapy techniques developed by certified master sound therapy teacher David Hulse at the turn of the century, utilizing the power of the ancient frequencies via our custom-made solfeggio tuning forks. Soma Energetics offers training in live workshops or via DVD home study courses. Course materials include color solfeggio tuning forks in the form of energy tuners and body tuners, and they are available exclusively from Soma Energetics. At SomaEnergetics.com, you'll have the finest tools in energy healing and sound therapy at your fingertips. So take a moment to visit this very informative website and be sure and check out the combo packages for the best deals. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 980-949-8921. Remember, visit www.SomaEnergetics.com to experience the power of sound therapy.
Now back to today's program on science, sound, and spirituality with David Hulse.
Welcome back to Science, Sound, and Spirituality. Today coming from Charlotte, North Carolina. And we're talking about A Course in Miracles. And we're here with Alan Batten, who is our producer, as well as a teacher of A Course in Miracles and other teachings that he does too. And we're talking about the thing that changed my life and the lives of millions and millions of people around the world. You know, one thing that I really find it fascinating, I recently just saw the movie A Course in Miracles, which is I totally recommend for people. But it's amazing to me the caliber of people that have been drawn to the course. I mean, psychologists, scientists, these are people well-educated that are drawn to this course.
And it runs the whole gamut from people who go to traditional churches and go to Sunday school, and then after that, they'll go to A Course in Miracles class.
That's really interesting.
And they sit and they take the lessons in the workbook one day at a time. By the end of a year, they are ready to start over again and learn
again.
Another level.
Yeah. Before you ask me the next thing, I wanted to just read something here out of the book about the course. And it says that it emphasizes application rather than theory. That's really good. We've had too much theory. Yeah. Trying to get the applicant. We had the cart before the horse. This says application rather than theory, experience rather than theology. Well, that's a new idea, yeah. Isn't it? It specifically states that, and I quote, a universal theology is impossible, but a universal experience is not only possible, but necessary. That is a powerful, powerful statement.
So, David, how about giving us a typical lesson from A Course in Miracles?
Sure. Let's go to the workbook for students. In the workbook, there are 365 different pages or lessons that for our each day of the year. The Course says all you need to give is just a little willingness to the Holy Spirit, and they even tell you that even if you could meditate 5 minutes, one or two times a day, that it can make all the difference, because it's just about opening that door to consciousness as it takes place. So what I just opened up here, which I feel guided, I happen to have it marked, especially in this time that we're living in of so much what's going on in the world, in the outer world. I mean, we have made a lot of serious illusions right now, illusions of hatred and war and all the things that have gone on in Paris and whatever. But that challenges us. But with the help of the Holy Spirit, I know when 9/11 happened, I was just devastated. I'd, you know, not been in the course that long, but I was really like, okay, I don't think there's anything. And I was sitting in my hot tub and I was crying and I was praying and whatever. And something said to me, you need to practice what you preach. And I said, well, what is that? And I had just taught that morning on all attack is a call for love. And I thought, oh my God, can I do that? Can I look at these people who just ran into these towers and feel compassion for them? I said, I can't do it. But then something said to me, but there's a part of you that can. And I called on that higher self, that Holy Spirit. And I said, what I can't do, you can do. And all of a sudden, Ellen, I began to feel the compassion just sweep over my whole body from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. And I felt like love was coming through me, not from me. So the lesson that I picked up here is lesson 34 on page 51 in the workbook. For you that have a book and want to check this out, I think it's so appropriate for today. I could see peace instead of this. The idea of today begins to describe the condition that prevail in the other way of seeing. The Course says you can always choose again. Even Jesus said, turn the other cheek. Sometimes I wonder if that's not really what he meant, that you don't have just one way of looking at something. Peace of mind is clearly an internal matter. It's not about arranging things out here so we can feel peaceful. It's about finding peace that is already innately built into us and then going back and reinterpreting what you think you are seeing based upon another part of your mind. So, it's an internal thing. It must begin with your own thoughts and then extend outwardly. That's important. This is not about me, 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 like so many schools of thoughts are, even under the name of spirituality. It's all about fix me, I'm broken, fix me, I'm sad, fix me, I'm lonely, fix me. This is a universal curriculum that is so important in A Course of Miracles that you can't keep it for yourself. But it's all about extending it. Just as Creator created us and extended us, Creator couldn't keep what it created in itself, but it had to extend it and share. So three longer practice periods are required for today's exercises. One in the morning, one in the evening is advised, and an additional can be undertaken anytime between what seems to be conducive to readiness. All application should be done with your eyes closed. It is your inner world to which the applications of this idea that we're giving you right now about seeing peace instead of this being the illusion of the mind, should be made. Some 5 minutes of mind searching are required for each of the longer practice periods. Search your mind for fear thoughts, anxiety-provoking situations. I did this just yesterday in meditating. Yesterday morning, I just happened to catch a little bit of something that went on over in Europe. And, of course, what I found in my mind was, is it going to happen here in America? Am I going to be safe to go to the mall? Made me feel anxious. And then I thought, no, let's look for other thoughts. Let's look up thoughts of compassion and love and understanding. Holy Spirit, help me now in this moment. And I did experience another miracle, a shift in perception. So if you begin to experience difficulty in thinking, which is definitely going to come, is the ego has resistance. That's what it does. It has created or made a defense mechanism. So when that comes up, and you have all these difficulties in thinking of specific subjects, continue to repeat the idea to yourself in an unhurried manner, not to make any specific exclusions. In other words, let go of the outcome. Or as the Buddhists say, let go of the grasp. Don't grasp onto it. The shorter applications are to be frequent, made whenever you feel your peace of mind is threatened in any way. So here is our exercise affirmation for this lesson, 34. I could see peace in this situation instead of what I now see in it. Again, I could see peace in this situation. It's within my power of choice to see peace in this situation instead of what I now see in it. So if the inroads of your peace of mind will then take form to move along the lines that you are now perceiving and thinking based upon love and oneness and truth and reality rather than on illusion. So.
We have 5 minutes left, David.
All right. Well.
What would you recommend to the audience about A Course in Miracles?
Well, if you're out there and you've never heard of A Course in Miracles, I believe I'd Google it. Put in A Course in Miracles, and I'm sure you're going to bring up a lot of things that you can look at and see, and you can find out that in most cities around the country and the world, there are A Course in Miracles classes. We have a weekly one here at Unity of Charlotte every week, in which people gather and read the book and discuss it and talk about it. And I think that is all over. You might look at Unity churches or New Thought churches in your areas if you have those, and to see if there's any places. And I'm sure the internet would lead you toward that. You want to make sure you get enough information that you can feel the guidance as to if you want to invest in the book or not. I would suggest that you, personally, I think it's good to have, to be a part of a class, to be a part of another group to discuss it. I think it's more challenging to read it on your own, but possibly that's the way you're guided. That'll be fine. But do look it up, and if nothing else, and you've not read any of Marianne Williamson's books, I'd start there. I mean, she has a way of writing her books based upon A Course in Miracles, and that would be a way to cut your teeth as I did on it. We'd love to hear from all of you that are listening to us today. Again, our website is www.somaenergetics.com, one word, small letters. And we would love to hear from you if you're listening to this podcast today. So until next week, we wish you the best. And we see the best. I don't wish you the best. I see the best for you, that you may experience the miracle of shifting your perception from fear to love. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of Science, Sound, and Spirituality with Master Teacher David Holtz. For more information, visit us at www.lightwithin.com. We invite you to join us every week here on BBS Radio for this insightful program and the first and third Thursday of each month for a live program. Until then, this is your announcer, Deborah Fitch, reminding you that your life is a gift, but your journey is a choice. Thank you for choosing to spend a part of your journey with us.